I'm speaking with Yolande Philip, and we spoke back a couple weeks ago, prior to your trip that you made this last week down to Grenada to see what was going on there in the aftermath of the hurricanes that have hit that island and the disaster that people are currently facing. I'm wondering if you can just talk a little bit about your trip and where you were and what you saw.
Okay, the trip itself was twofold. We went number one to bring as much foodstuff as possible. Between my brother and I, we were only allowed 280 pounds of food, and that was we knew that was just a temporary relief measure. The other reason we went was to set up some sort of system, work with a community in terms of providing food on a long-term basis. So that was pretty much the intent of the trip, which we felt was successful that way. Getting to Grenada itself, it was a difficult trip. We sort of prepared ourselves because we were told what to expect. But, arriving at the airport, it was a shock. The typical green, luscious hills were no more. They were brown. Trees were leafless. Bark was stripped from the trees, and we saw a few, at least one shelter, a tent, sort of like a tent city for the homeless. And, touring throughout the island, you can just see the destruction. Houses fell apart, rooftops totally gone, destroyed. And as you drive around the rest of the island, you just notice the ecological disaster as well. So that was difficult.
And so what was the difference between what you saw in the sort of the main cities and in the more rural areas of the island?
Well, by the time we arrived, I would say we didn't see the brunt of the disaster by the time we arrived, because people at that point had started repairing their roofs, and rooftops were back on. The cities, a lot of there's no electricity. The vast majority of the island is without electricity. So there were odd spots in the main city, the capital city, where electricity was going. Buildings, hotels totally destroyed, crumbled. And as you moved into the interior of the country, that's when you really notice a lot of the devastation.
And how were the people that you met up with, and where were they in terms of where their level of spirits were at, and sort of resilience in terms of dealing with the situation?
You found a mixture of people in terms of where they were psychologically. Some people were so devastated, and that there was just nowhere, they couldn't see anywhere where they could pick up and start over. There were a lot of people who were moving on in terms of cleaning up, getting a roof back over their head. So, I think as a whole, everybody wants to sort of move on from this and do as much as they can, to advance from that point on. But it's hard when there's nothing to purchase to put up a house or et cetera. So,
How was the trip for you and your brother on a personal level?
well, like I said, when we first drove out of the airport, we couldn't see much coming in, just because the plane came in at an angle, so we couldn't see anything from above. But as we were driving out of the airport, that's when it really hit you. And it was hard because we had to sort of hold back tears, just knowing what Grenada was and what it is now. The next thing was meeting up with our relatives, and it was a mixture of joy and sorrow too, sympathizing, empathizing with their loss, And at the same time, we were happy to see them. They were ecstatic to see us because, you know, it was that whole reassurance thing that, you know, we're in this together. We're with you guys. We didn't forget you guys through this entire ordeal. So that was difficult.
Yeah. And how is communication kind of back up now for in terms of keeping in touch with your relatives and family in the different communities that they live in?
Mm-hmm. A lot of the landlines are destroyed. There may be the odd home that has a telephone that's operational. Cell phone seems to be the thing now. Absolutely every individual almost has a cell phone. So that is the main way of communication right now.
Maybe you can talk about what people wanted to share about their experience of, well, like during the hurricane and what was going on as things were happening.
Well, I think the people of Grenada, they're sort of comical in that sense. You know, everybody wanted to tell you their story, you know, what they were doing after, you know, what they were cooking, what they had on, you know, the whole thing. So, you know, some of the stories were actually quite funny. And one story, you know, they told us of my aunt. And, you know, she had to get this food cooked in preparation for the hurricane. And, you know, the wind and stuff was blowing. But I don't know, maybe she figured she had a few hours or whatever to play. So she finished cooking this food. And she said all of a sudden the wind just blew out of nowhere and it trapped her inside. She couldn't open the door or anything. Now, there was about 12 of them, actually about 10 of them in a little, it's such a tiny room. I took a photo of this room, this tiny room that the rest of the family sort of huddled in. And so when she got trapped, the house started falling apart and she got scared. So she grabbed a scarf and she took her purse, jammed herself into a wardrobe, and she tied the scarf around the handle, door handle, and held it shut, pulled it shut, and wrapped her wrist around the other end of the scarf. And she said she was terrified. She could hear, you know, the walls falling down upon the wardrobe, and you know, she said she was praying that somebody would come and get her. Now, when they said the wind came in intervals, so you'd have a 20-second break, a 30-second break, and it was then that one of the younger cousins, you know, ran out, and they basically had to drag her out because she was petrified to come out of this little wardrobe. But after that, you know, it's the big joke now in the family. Everybody sort of laughs about how she jammed herself into this wardrobe. But another amazing story was another aunt of mine. I guess she got caught in the house as well. And it's her husband, herself, and 5 kids. And what happened was she was preparing herself, I guess, fairly all right. She had a lot of things wrapped in bags and whatever. And the night before, she had baked 5 loaves of bread, tied it up in bags and whatnot. They didn't have time to run to the shelter across the street, which is a church. The shelter was locked. So when the eye of the hurricane, I guess, hit the island, their house was falling apart. So they ran out of their house. They couldn't even, she said, walk across the street. So they ran to the neighbor's house. Now, the neighbors weren't in their house. What they did was they jammed themselves into the ground. In Grenada, a lot of the houses are built into the hills, more or less, and the back part of the house is on concrete pillars. So it's almost like a triangle where the front part of the house meets the ground. And so her husband and herself took the 5 kids and they jammed themselves into this tiny, almost like a crawl space to, you know, wait out the storm. Now, another member in their church that was further up the road, you know, started counting heads and they were wondering where this family was. So two men braved the hurricane and they came out looking for this family. And she said these guys really risked their lives because there was a twisted metal, galvanized, fallen telephone wires, trees. They had to, you know, hop over and go under things. And they came and they got the two kids, brought them to a safe house. And they came back. The second trip they made, took the other two kids, and her husband and herself took the last child. And, you know, when she tells you this story, you know, her eyes just well up in tears because she said, you know, they didn't have to do it. But she said, you know, they took it upon themselves and they risked their lives to save them. And, you know, she told us the next day they went back to see the damage. Well, the entire house was just gone, walls blown apart. Part of the flooring remained. And she said the only thing that was sitting there was a couch. And she said the 5 loaves of bread remained intact, tied in this plastic bag, not a rip, nothing wet. And she said the next, they had stayed in this house with five other families. And she said the next day they woke up, kids were hungry, everything. And she said it was incredible because they had breakfast the next morning. Mm-hmm. So when I heard that story, it was an incredible story. And I think that's probably, you know, one of the things that, you know, was amazing through the whole ordeal.
How are people sort of, I guess, supporting one another that you saw as well? Has there been a lot of cooperative sharing where maybe one family's lost their home and another family's managed to maintain theirs?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, people really pulled together, I think, through that time. A lot of families bunked up together. You know, there were homes with up to 6 families in one home. Now, people moved out after, you know, replacing their roofs, etc. And as well, there's been a lot of cleanup. You know, certain communities have banded together and, you know, gone around cleaning up. So the government itself are calling the general public to come out for, you know, like a national cleanup day, etc. So, you know, they are, you know, attempting to move ahead. So that's good.
What did you observe in terms of the relief effort? How is that going? What is becoming available to people through that?
Right now, it's kind of difficult. I was only there for a week, so I can only say what I saw. And, you know, from speaking to a lot of villagers, the main consensus is, you know, we haven't seen anything. We haven't gotten any relief food. You know, and they were out of water for a while. Water is back now for the majority of people who do have a house still standing. But yeah, there is nothing out there really in terms of relief food. There's a little bit coming in on the docks itself, but they haven't seen any food.
I guess how will your efforts maybe differ from those of some of the I don't know who's orchestrating any main relief effort, but like how are you going to ensure that support gets directly to the village that you've adopted, Corinth, and how will that be distributed in that area?
Well, we're trying to organize with a shipping company that's we feel is fairly reliable. Now there are shipping companies now that are allowed to go in, and you know, shipping is happening. What we have done, instead of addressing barrels of food to individual homes, we've chosen a minister in that community, someone who's well trusted, dependable, respected in that community, that has agreed to use his church facilities as a distribution point. And he has a list. We've made a list of all the needy families in that community, and he will distribute the food from that point on. Mm-hmm. And as well, he is forming a committee down there of members within the village that will help distribute. So that way we feel fairly confident that the food will get to the needy ones.
Mm-hmm. And I guess where are things at now with the committee that's in Guelph, and how are things going with amassing food and donations and getting things together here?
It's going really good. You know, we've been working with the Red Cross for about 3 weeks now, and it's the response has been incredible from Guelph and surrounding communities. We've raised over $10,000 so far with the Red Cross, and we are continuing to work with them. Now, that money that we've collected with the Red Cross, it's not necessarily going to Grenada alone. It's distributed among the Caribbean, and it's left to the individual to specify which island they would like the money to go to. The food drive is going good. Again, you know, the people of Guelph have really come through. We've got schools now that are really gung-ho in terms of collection of bottled water. They're having their own food drive. I know we've got quite a few organizations that are supporting us. We've got Sears, Stone Road Mall, they're doing a 50-50 draw. Aqua Hair Salon is doing a fun drive. Eden House Nursing Home also are supporting us through non-perishable donation. McNeil Products are supplying health supplies. Parkview Daycare, non-perishables as well. And the City of Waterloo, Transportation and Works, have collected non-perishable for us. Now, the schools that are involved, we've got several, some high schools, elementary and Catholic schools, St. Paul's Catholic Elementary, Milton High School, Brookfield Catholic Elementary, Center Wellington High School, Jean Little Public School, and St. Peter's Catholic School. And they're doing a phenomenal job in terms of supporting us and just keeping the drive alive.
Well, it sounds fabulous. How can people, are there specific things that you're still looking for? There's certainly the bottled water. Are there other particular goods that are more useful than others?
Yeah, when I, you know, for the week we were down there, we spoke to a lot of individuals and said, you know, what is it mainly that you're looking for? And the big response was candles. Any kerosene lanterns, battery-operated lanterns, simply because at this point, I would say about 98% of the island is still without electricity. And that, to restore electricity to the island, it's just incredible, because the destruction, you would have to actually go and see the actual destruction of telephone wires, conductor boxes, etc. So anything that can produce light is what they're asking for, tarps, and as well, you know, the canned and dry food, but those are the two main things, candles and tarps.
And where should people drop those off now, and how can they get in touch with the committee to contribute?
Mm-hmm. We've got a phone number, 824-4743. So anyone who would like to donate can call that number. We can also arrange for pickup. So if you don't have a way of transporting, don't worry. We can always make arrangements for that. The address for drop-off is 590 Edinburgh Road South, and that's here in Guelph. Now, if individuals want to donate or even organize some kind of fundraising or anything like that, you can contact Marva Wisdom, and I'll give you an email address, which will make it a little bit easier. m2wisdom@rogers.com. That's the easiest way to get in touch, and she can help any individual or corporation wanting to do something. She can help organize that.
Well, it really sounds like people are pulling together here, and it's great to hear that the schools are getting involved. That sounds like a terrific link for you guys. Have you had any conversations with some of the students that are involved in that?
Not the students directly, but we spoken to quite a few of the teachers, and right now they've got a group of students, high school students, I believe Central Wellington, that's willing to volunteer their time in terms of packing the boxes and barrels and just sorting through, because we are getting a lot of stuff, clothes, etc., that we're not necessarily taking clothes right now. We're not going to refuse anybody who would like to donate clothes, but all that, we're sort of keeping that shipment separate from the food stuff. But yeah, there's a lot of students who, I believe, who are willing to volunteer. And I think on the whole, it's a positive thing. You know, just from speaking to some of the principals as well, you know, the kids are interested in helping.
Mm-hmm. I mean, too, just to kind of have a little bit of a, I don't know, kids can make such a personal connection to things a lot of the times, and to have a feeling of connection to, you know, a place in another part of the world is important for young people a lot of the time. And any other thoughts or things that really stood out for you when you were down in Grenada that you want to share with people?
Just, you know, despite everything, I mean, it's a hard time for a lot of people, but the thing that really struck me was just how content people were. I mean, despite everything, they were still able to laugh. They were still able to share a plate of food with you. Even though, you know, there might not have been that much, but you know, they're a giving people, and you know, they're hardworking too. So it's a big setback for a lot of them, but as you know, a lot of them said, you know, we'll have to start over and just keep going and move from this point on. So that was the one thing that really struck me.
How long do you anticipate sort of the initial drive running for?
Well, we would like to keep it running well after Thanksgiving. The shipment of food that we're collecting, we like to get it out shortly after Thanksgiving. You know, a lot of the drives are coming in at that time, so we're hoping. The other problem that we are running into right now is the fact that we're not a charitable organization. This was just a committee formed on the spur of the moment sort of thing, and there are a lot of corporations, grocers, etc., that would like to donate huge amounts of food, equipment, but because we're not a charitable organization, we can't offer them a number, a tax write-off number. So that's a problem we're running into. So we're asking anybody out there that has a solution to this problem to contact us once again at 824-4743, and hopefully we can get through it. We're also asking a lot of, because this is a long-term project, we're hoping to sort of work out something in terms of building. Right now, I mean, you can't have a hurricane-proof house, but maybe a hurricane-resistant house, I would say. So on the island, a lot of talk now is geared towards that type of building. So we're looking at, in the future, coming up, maybe local builders, etc., to donate their time and their expertise in terms of going down and working alongside with builders down there at constructing. And we're going to be targeting the poor, you know, sector of the community, the ones who really need a home now. So that's another sort of long-term goal of the committee as well.
Well, we'll keep the information sort of at the forefront, and do touch base with us if there's different phases of the project as well.